This is the first time Chirp Radio's live storytelling and music series recorded at Martyrs in Chicago's North Center neighborhood. Here's your host, Jen Sodini.
Stephanie Douglas hosts The Moth here in Chicago. She's a Grand Slam champion. She is the co-founder of New York Theater Company, The Team, and was the head writer for OLN's Outside Magazine Ultimate Top 10. She hosts Story Club Northside and co-hosts the Inglewood Storytelling Open Mic. And she is grateful to serve as chief program officer at the Greater Westtown Community Development. We're very happy to have Stephanie Douglas.
Can we give it up for Jen, too? Woo, woo, woo. My dad had uncanny timing. Every time the bus from New York City was exactly 5 minutes out from the shared Greyhound and MARTS bus station in Scranton, Pennsylvania, he would call. And this is the way it was for 10 years of bus trips every time I would come home from New York to Scranton. He would call just before we got to the Rockies sign where you could make it say, "Happy birthday, fill in your friend's name here." And we would talk for the last 5 minutes of the ride, and then he would meet me at the bus station. But on this phone call, it ended up being a little different because about a minute in, I turned my head. And I saw this face I had never expected to see. 3 years earlier, I was the head writer for an extreme sports documentary TV show. I know, typecast, we all understand. And the show was coming to an end. And so the producer took me out to lunch and was like, "Hey, I need you to get started on some research for our next show. I have an amazing idea." And I'm like, "Awesome, awesome. I still have a job." And she's like, I'm like, "What's your idea?" She says, "Okay, so you know how like all women have had some guy like take out their dick randomly in public and just start like masturbating in front of them?" And I'm like, "Well, not like all women, like hashtag not all women." And she's like, no, all women. And I'm like, "Well, no." And I'm like, everybody? And she's like, yeah. And she kind of looks at me and is like, "No." And I'm like, I've never. And she's like, "Yes, you have. Like, you just probably blocked out. Like, you blocked it out." And I'm like, "No, like, I've never." And she's like, "No, you definitely have. Everybody has." She's like, "You have absolutely seen, like, multiple strange and unwanted penises." And I'm like, "I have seen many strange penises and many unwanted penises on people that I know, but I've never seen a strange or unwanted penis on a complete stranger." And she's like, "Yes, you have. And look, we are often not believed when we talk about horrible things that have happened to us." But I felt like I was in this reverse case where she's like, "There's no way somebody hasn't just started masturbating in front of you. Like, there's no way." And I was like, and my brain just kind of stopped. And I'm like, "Everybody." And she's like, "Ask your friends." And so I, as a good researcher, you know, started polling my friends. We're all in our like early 20s in New York City. And all my friends are like, "Oh yeah, like 4 last Monday. Like, are you kidding?" Even my drag queen friends were like, "Honey, that's why they call it the D train, you know?" And I'm just like, how am I mean, I'm glad I'm not in this club, but like, how the fuck am I not in this club? And, you know, I still started the research process, and it involved also watching a significant amount of interviews, talking to experts in the field, and really, like, getting info from people who had committed sexual offenses. And one of the main things that I learned and that we were also going to focus on was that, you know, for years and years and decades, and let's be honest, probably all of fucking history, the assumption had been like, oh, you know, somebody like takes out their dick, somebody just starts masturbating in public, they're harmless, that's it, we don't do anything. But most of these folks who had committed offenses would actually say, when you talk to them or when they were being interviewed, like, "Well, I took out my dick. I flashed someone and no one did anything, you know? And so next time I did it a little closer. And then the next time I tried to get someone to touch it." And they talked about how just like one after another, like just the first flash was the first course, right? It was this thing that had been believed for years to be harmless was actually the first step. And they also talked about the fact that they could keep getting away with it because in most cases, women who they were doing this to were silent. And I remember just hearing that word over and over again in these interviews. You know, they're silent. They don't say anything. Nobody says anything. They are embarrassed. I take out my penis, and they are embarrassed, and they won't say anything. And I remember noting this furiously and you know, bringing this to the production team, and time passed. And it was 3 years later, and I'm on the phone with my dad on this bus hurtling towards Scranton. And I turn my head to the side, and where I had expected to see two eyes, I saw just one. And this dude is on the March Trailways bus, dick full out, wet, soggy newspaper underneath it, fully going to town. And I'm like, Dad, I need to call you back, which is ridiculous because we are now 3 minutes away from the bus station. And I hang up the phone and I am frozen. And all of a sudden, you know, I hear like my producer being like, there's no fucking way you haven't seen 1,000 dicks. And, you know, and all this and like these, and I hear these folks who had committed these offenses being like, they stay quiet. You stay quiet. You are fucking embarrassed. You're going to look at my penis and you're going to be embarrassed. And all of a sudden it was like the Captain Planet ring of all of these things come together. And I'm looking at this guy and his like, and I am sorry, bodies are all beautiful, but like this was like one of the like dead fish skin colored ones. And I was like, I just kept kind of being like, oh, that's okay, okay, that's okay. You know, insult to injury. And so before I know it, I am standing up in the aisle of the bus and yelling at the top of my voice, I'm gonna need you to pull the bus over because this guy is masturbating and he has his penis out and I am not interested in watching him finish before we get to the Steamtown Mall. And the bus driver jerks the bus to the side and starts pulling off. And all of a sudden, this motherfucker starts slapping the wet newspaper like fish and chips over his sopping dick and screaming, she's a liar! She's crazy! She's a crazy liar! And I want to tell you all that, like, you know, for those who have been gaslit, that is also real. It is not okay. I am going to say, when someone is trying to gaslight you while slopping, sopping newspaper over their dead fish dick, it is less convincing. The bus driver pulls over, he stops the bus, and he stands up, and I immediately just feel this kinship because he is, you know, he's in his probably early 70s, about 6'5", and, you know, hair combed over, like, he looks just like my grandfather, and I'm like, oh, and so he starts lumbering to the back of the bus, and he looks at me, and he looks at the guy who's still screaming, like, she's crazy, just, like, slapping the newspaper down, and I'm like, those poor articles. And the bus driver goes, you gotta be kidding me. And I'm like, wait, does he like not believe me? Because this is very apparent. But no, he's like, come on, give me a break. And he looks at me and he says, do you want me to call the cops? And I have this moment where it's like, I know what I know about the next steps, but I also know what I know about, you know, the work that I do and the things that I believe about the criminal justice system. And then I look to the side because the MART bus seats, for those of you who have traveled in America's favorite pastime, are staggered. And I am in one direct view across, but in the seat in front of me that is the other direct view across is a 3-year-old sitting backwards on his father's lap. And I realize in that moment that I do not know who the busturbator was actually doing this toward. And at that moment, I am like, absolutely. Because I don't know, but I know either way, like, we have to stop these next steps. And so the bus driver does that, and I'm kind of like feeling bad because there are all these, you know, cute old ladies in the front who are on their shopping trip to New York City who probably didn't expect to, like, you know, have wet dick air, but like, so it goes in Scranton, you know? And finally, you know, he like gets the okay. He pulls the bus out and we finish the last 3 minutes of the trip and we pull into the bus station and I sort of see my dad out the window kind of looking at me quizzically and I'm kind of like, he's and I had moved to the front of the bus so I didn't see this, you know, the father had kind of like moved his kid after he realized what was happening. And And I'm at the front of the bus, and they're all these, like, old ladies who'd been on the shopping trip, and they're like, I was like, you know, I'm sorry. Sorry about the wait, because they had to, you know, cops came and took him off the bus, and we had to sort of, everyone had to stay seated, and they're like, no. You know, a lot of people actually stay very quiet when that happens. You know, I had a friend who had this happen, and they all start kind of talking about how, like, oh, these are things, because it has happened to everybody. Everybody. And so eventually I get off the bus and I have to meet with, you know, the police officer so he can take my statement. And I will say, like, I have to give it up for the Northeast PA cop. He only giggled like 3 or 4 times during my description of what was going on and only told me I should be flattered once. And then kind of, look, I'm going to say, for a Northeastern PA cop, like, that's solid, okay? We're going to give credit. Like, he only said it once and then he was kind of like, but it's still bad. You know, it's still bad. I know, it's also fucking awful. But he took the statement, it was thorough, and, you know, I went back with my dad, and we had a very nice weekend. And that next week, I got a call from the local DA, and he's like, I know you're not gonna wanna, you know, probably come back to Scranton, and I was like, I will be there, when can I be there? And so 2 months later, I show up to the Scranton courthouse. My dad comes with me because he had, you know, retired a few years ago from there, but it was like a reunion for him. And he's like, oh, my daughter caught a masturbator, you know. And I'm sitting in the courthouse and I'm like, oh my God, what if they ask me to like identify him? Because like there are parts of this guy I know super well, but I'm like, is it gonna be like a dick lineup? You know? I'm like, but I don't have to worry because all of a sudden I look up and I see this sort of like pastel like striped shirt with a pink fish dick coming out of it, but apparently just his face also looked that way. So, you know, full body choice. And I hear, because the hallway in the Scranton courthouse echoes beautifully, and so I hear his lawyer, who, not really germane but important, I think, for those of us who are 80s kids know, whose name was actually T. Axel Foley. Guy with a long blonde ponytail and an ill-fitting suit. And T. Axel is talking to his client, and I just hear him saying, like, you know, You need to plead. If you don't plead guilty, like they know you did it. There are other witnesses, but she's gonna come in and testify. If you don't plead guilty, and if she comes in and testifies, like you're extra done. And the DA is coming to me, and he's sort of like, he's like, you know, it's unlikely we get jail time for this. But, and I'm like, wait. I'm like, I don't know if this guy was masturbating at me or the 3-year-old, but either way, he's sick. Like something's wrong. And the DA is like, wait, you don't want us to like push hard for jail time? And I'm like, no, I want him to get help. Like, I want help. And he's like, so like 2 years of therapy and a registry? And I'm like, yes, like, sure, definitely. And he's like, oh my God. And his face just lights up. He goes in. T. Axel eventually convinces his client, who absolutely was the client and was guilty, so it was fine in this case, you know, to plead, you know, that he had actually masturbated on a bus in front of me and a child. And he does. And the DA comes out, and I'm like, okay, like, this is good. And he's like, yeah, I guess. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, I mean, there's no way we really, like, follow up on this stuff. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, look, if he doesn't show up for therapy for about 6 months, you know, sometimes we, you know, try and track him down. But he's like, this stuff is backed up for years. So, you know, it's on record. We do the best we can. And my heart dropped, because it's like you realize there are those times when you feel so incredibly prepared and like you know everything you're supposed to do, and then somehow the outcome is just not what you knew it should be, what it's supposed to be. And in my more compassionate moments, I feel like the masturbator and I were, you know, both together in that, because each of us kind of set out with an intention and knowing exactly what we wanted to happen, and neither of us got our happy ending. Thank you.
I want you to find me, forget myself, I want you. think about you, I touch myself.
The First Time is a live lit and music series recorded at Martyrs in Chicago's North Center neighborhood. Each reader tells a true first tale followed by any cover of the storyteller's choosing performed by our house band, The First Time 3. The First Time is hosted by Jen Sodini, directed by Bobby Evers, podcast produced by Jim Mulvaney, recorded by Tony Baker.